Thanks for coming out today. I know the weather's getting a little iffy, but we'll pray really fast. So I have a dear friend named Karen. She lives out in the Midwest. Karen was a client of mine originally, and we've then become friends. That happens pretty frequently. And she's a distance healer, an intuitive reader, and a distance healer. And we had a conversation the other day. Because Karen was concerned that her ego was interfering with her work. When I asked her what she meant, she said that she'd gotten some really great hits. She was doing some distance healing, and she'd gotten some really spot-on hits with her clients. And I waited to hear what the problem was, and she went on to say that she was so happy and excited about those hits, and it felt really great for her to be validated that she was actually doing, that she was accurate in her location for healing. At which point she quickly shut down the joy in her voice, and she said she didn't want to tell anybody about this. She didn't want to tell any of her friends. She didn't want to, she's a little nervous talking to me about it, because she didn't want to dwell on this or celebrate these hits, this success. And she was a bit on the fence about whether she even wanted to continue doing this work, because her ego wanted to take some credit for these successes. Now, there aren't many people in the world who I know who can say that they're living their mission, but my friend Karen is definitely one of them. In this day and age, we tend to promote goals more than mission. And missions, maybe because missions usually mean something really big. You know, we think of mission, people on a mission like Mother Teresa or Albert Schweitzer, or we think of missions as something heroic like the military is doing, or even religious, you know, religious missionaries who go out into the world and, you know, try to convert the savages. But I don't believe missions are limited to solely traditional humanitarian aims. Some missions are born of tragedy. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, for instance. The Amber Alert coming out of Amber's Law, the young girl who was kidnapped. Even the Brady Bill. We have these victims of tragedies, and the surviving members of their families go on a mission to make it a law, or at least make it so that this is there's a proper punishment for transgressions like this. And most of us think of missions as those kinds of things, and so we can back away from them. They seem a little daunting, or it seems like, you know, we have to, you know, have to be taking on the world if we're going to have a personal mission. But can a mission also be to provide a quality product or service to somebody? I think yes. Studies have shown that when a business or a business person has a genuine sense of mission about what they're doing, that the productivity increases, and of course, profits increase along with that. A salesperson, a healer, a teacher, any of those kinds of, you know, engaged people, people engaged in their community who have a sense of mission, the more frequently they talk about their mission and and celebrate their mission, the higher and the better their service will be. And, of course, the higher and better their material rewards will be. Because mission and productivity and mission and reward or profit are interdependent. And making money can feel like a selfish experience sometimes, or an ego-driven experience, especially if you're in the healing tradition or the teaching occupations. And it took me a long time to feel comfortable about charging for my services, too. I've had people tell me I shouldn't charge at all for what I do. I haven't offered to pay my bills, but they think I am quick to judge whether or not I should charge. But having a mission is the antidote to that feeling of selfishness. I don't believe it's selfish. I'm talking about that feeling of selfishness that sometimes kicks in when we're charging for something that we love to do. But a mission has to first be personal to you. It's got to kind of, even if it doesn't take on the world, it has to mean the world to you. Mission is at the heart of why you do the things that you do. And this is different from goals because goals are usually steps along the way to achieving that mission. And a goal doesn't necessarily have to better the world, but a mission generally has an eternal kind of quality, a legacy quality. It may extend beyond our lifetime. But goals are achieved and or discarded to be replaced by others. So goals are steps along the way of living our mission. Some of our great political leaders, and not so great political leaders, usually have a mission, and one of the goals towards achieving their mission is to get elected or to pass certain laws. But having a mission and living a mission is something where your ego, I think, has to be involved a little bit, because a mission is the feeling like I can make a difference in the world. I can change the world. And that's, especially if you're coming from a mission that is in the healing or teaching traditions, as I've said, that can kind of conflict with, well, you shouldn't benefit from this, or you personally shouldn't benefit from, or you should give it away. But if you're living a mission, and you have a mission and you're living a mission, it's because you know or you feel somewhere in your heart that you can make a difference in the world. Because it gives purpose to your life. Mission, though, isn't the exclusive territory of great leaders or even of leaders at all. It's the right, and I believe the responsibility to some extent, of everyone who's here. And I believe it's also an essential ingredient to our well-being. So why do you do what you do? Why do you care about what you care about? My friend Karen does her distance healing work because she feels called by spirit to do so. Yet when she does it and it really sings for her, she feels guilty for feeling good about it. I'm glad she called me when she did, because I hope I was able to talk her down off of this kind of this position she felt in, like, well, I shouldn't go forward because I feel good about it. And during our conversation, Karen said to me, you know, Priscilla, you're just so humble. And I said, the hell I am. I'm not humble at all. And why should I be? Why should any of us be humble? Listen, your spirit, your soul, your higher self, whatever you want to call it, is the part of you that's immortal. The spirit people tell us this all the time. This is the part of you that does know why you're here, that does know why you feel called to do whatever it is you feel called to do. And when you do something that really clicks for you, or when you identify what gives you a really deep sense of purpose and fulfillment, of course you're going to feel great about it. You're going to feel like singing or celebrating. And that's not the mind celebrating itself, nor is it the ego puffing itself up. That's the spirit saying, yes, do more of that. Those moments when time seems to disappear, when we truly connect with another person, you just know it's otherworldly, you're supernatural. And that's the same if you're selling cars or managing the human resources department or doing healing work. What you do, if it serves your mission, your spirit, your calling, by all means, celebrate. That feels good because it's supposed to. Feeling good feels good because we're supposed to feel good. When I was a designer, I had a career as a graphic designer for many, many years. When I was a designer, I loved it. I loved answering that call, following my own mission, which was to help people present their business or their product or their idea in a pictorial way that captured all of their feelings and their hopes and their understanding. To me, that was very gratifying when I would put a couple designs together and show my client, and he or she would just, they would just know that one, they'd point at it, or that one, but can you make it green, or whatever it might be, but knowing that I had taken something that was really abstract in a way. I mean, they had a mission written down in words. They knew what their business, they knew what their product was, they knew what their service was. But to represent that in a pictorial way is a whole other kind of translation, and it was really wonderful doing that for my clients when I did that. It was fun, I was good at it, and I never for a moment shrank from asking for my fee. And never did anyone ever say to me, "Boy, you're good at that. I don't think you ought to charge for that." And I became a hypnotist because hypnosis saved my life. I'd had an eating disorder, for those of you who don't know, I had an eating disorder, and for 12 years I'd tried all sorts of different therapies, traditional and non-traditional, and it wasn't until I had hypnosis that I was saved. And it had such an impact on me that I became a hypnotist. And my mission then was to help people see how extraordinarily powerful your mind is and how each one of us is the sole agent of change in our lives. And that's not scary. That's really quite empowering. And watching people come out of my hypnosis chair, out of their hypnotic state of mind and out of the chair, and the look on their face of hope and optimism and possibility, man, that was great. And I got a little bit of feedback about, "Hey, really? You think you ought to charge for that?" And when I began to do psychic readings and mediumship readings and connect people to their loved ones who'd passed away, I had a new mission, which is the one I'm operating with now. It's probably not going to last forever. I can already feel myself shifting into what I'm going to be doing next. I just listen, answer the call. But what I do now is to help people, when I connect them with their loved ones in the spirit world, to help them just drop this whole business of judgment. Judging ourselves, criticizing ourselves, or judging other people, or allowing ourselves to feel judged. The spirit people tell us all the time, the only thing you take into the spirit world is what feels good. Love, compassion, connection, all the grudges, all the, you know, the Hatfields and McCoys, they're partying together in heaven, believe me. They're not, you know, whatever their generation, subsequent generations have carried on here on earth, that doesn't go with us into the spirit world. All the guilt, the shame, the grudges, that stuff stays here. And I get a lot of judgment about whether or not I should charge for my services. One woman actually said to me, "Well, I hope you don't get cancer." Which, with the tone of her voice was, "Boy, I hope you do." She wanted a free reading, and I, you know, she had always gotten free readings her entire life, and she wanted another one. Someone had recommended me, so she called me, and I told her what my fee was, and she said, "Well, I've always gotten free readings," and I said, "Well, I don't work that way. This is not my hobby. This is how I pay my mortgage. I'm happy to negotiate a reduced cost for you if you really have a hardship." And she refused. She wanted it for free. And I said, "Well, I don't do that, you know." But she was so mad at me that she passive-aggressively hoped I would get cancer. And we never spoke again, as you can imagine. But all these three things, these three major occupations that I've had in my life were all missions of mine. They were missions that I connected with, that I stumbled upon, that I sought after. But every single one of them I studied, I trained for. Each one was a skill that I developed. I had a good eye for design. Maybe I had that naturally, but I also went to school for that. I have a good ear for listening and a good rapport so I can connect with my hypnosis clients. And maybe I have that naturally, but I also did a lot of training, and I do continuing education. I have to stay certified as a hypnotist. And my work as a medium and a psychic, maybe I have that naturally, but I also practice it every day, and I worked and studied a lot with this. These are gifts, maybe. I submit that they're missions. And at different times in my life, I've had different missions, as I've said, and I've discovered or created them and found a way to work in a field that made it possible to live my mission. I just aligned myself with what felt right for me. And maybe it came out looking easy, or maybe it came out looking like I had a gift and I didn't have to work hard, but I did. And it's acceptable, I believe it's acceptable, to celebrate a great design, to celebrate a weight loss or quitting smoking through hypnosis, to celebrate a connection with a loved one in the spirit world. I was telling my friend Karen, I'm just translating for the dead people. I'm not making it. I'm not inventing these messages or inventing the... I'm not really working much at all. I'm really just kind of getting out of my own way and translating, giving a message that does not originate from me. So sometimes when I'm giving a message that is really profound or I make a connection that is really meaningful for somebody, I'm in as much awe as the person I'm giving it to. I think that's really cool. To this day, I kind of blow my own mind sometimes. Like, wow, did that really just come through me? That's pretty cool. I think that's worth celebrating. And I don't think my ego is really involved in that. Maybe it is a little bit, but not because yay me, but because I'm connecting with something that happens to be my personal mission. And it's singing and it's working. When your abilities and your passion are working together, of course it feels perfect. So why not this week think about your mission? Take a few minutes just to think about the answer to this question. What is it that you believe you do that makes a difference to other people or to humankind? Or in other words, why do you do what you do? And your mission statement, let's call it that, doesn't need to show how the mission is done. It's just to express your values and your beliefs. Your mission doesn't have to coincide with your job. Many people have jobs to support their missions. Many people work full-time jobs so that they can do part-time evening and weekends. You know, the fine artist who waits tables, or the author who teaches full-time, or the volunteer for the food pantry who works on Wall Street. Just take a few minutes to figure out that for yourself. And though the voices of your upbringing may urge you to be humble, remember that humility belongs to the ego, not to the spirit. And when you're working in your mission or expressing your mission, that's coming from spirit. The ego has every right to celebrate alongside the spirit. But when the ego is celebrating alone, humility may apply there. When the ego is celebrating alone, that's something I think we call arrogance. But when you look at what your mission might be now, and you can find a way to exercise it somewhere, somehow, I think it's worth raising the roof with celebration. The Bible, after all, invites us to shine our light, not hide it under a basket. Matthew tells us in chapter 5, verse 15, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. So let your light shine before humankind in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Creator, who is in heaven." Amen.